are.
Hello and welcome to episode 350 of the Hooniverse podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Glucker, and joining me is my friend, Ron Ball. What is going on, Ron?
I don't know what all you just said, but I'm good. You were frozen.
It was the basic intro, episode 350, blah, blah, blah. It always like freezes right when we start, and then it's fine. Exactly. It's weird.
Maybe we start and get a minute in the future, but
yeah.
No, all good here, man. I got to admit, I have a little bit lower energy level than usual. Just got back from SEMA last night. I drove back and got home at like 1 o'clock in the morning. Had a late night. Got up, went to work today. Worked a full day.
Damn.
Yeah, I almost forgot what that was like. But yeah, man, I'm here. I'm making it. I'm enthused.
Nice.
Yeah, I definitely had to have a 4 p.m. Espresso.
Sure. I just had to have that was. I don't have any beer in my fridge. Mm-hmm. I don't have wine, so I poured a glass of scotch.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had scotch in a while, so that I just took that first sip on camera. And I was like, "Oh boy, that's what that's like." I forgot.
I know you didn't participate in Sober October, but why are you lacking? Why do you not have rations?
I don't know. Just haven't gone to the store and haven't picked stuff up. I've just been slacking. I had beer today with my the last beer in my fridge with my friend and mobile bike mechanic. He's he rides with the mountain bike crew that I ride with, mm-hmm. and then he also has a side hustle fixing bikes. So he'll come and pick the bike up from my house, take it, fix it, and bring it back.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
While he was here, I opened this, which is actually a special beer. Francois, if you're listening to this episode, I just opened and drank the last of the two Westy 12s that you sent over.
Nice.
So yeah, I opened a West Vlateri.
Did he 12. Send them over or did he hand deliver them?
No, it's when he came to visit. Yeah, he brought him with him.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
I drank one of them at Lemons, and then I just drank the one tonight, shared it with my friend Brian, who is way into Belgian beer, so he was very excited and thought it was delicious.
Nice.
Because I broke a spoke on my mountain bike.
Oh, damn. The other day. What kind of wheel is it?
The wheels are carbon, but it's just a spoke. It's fine. The wheels are fine. I even rode on it a second time.
Oh, wow.
And just I zip tied the spoke to another spoke so it wasn't clacking around.
Is it like a wire spoke?
It's
a traditional wire looking
like
spoke?
A, okay. Yep. Not, they're made out of metal. But
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a carbon rim or what's the terminology? Correct.
In
bike, the hoop, bicycles.
You could say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The hoop is carbon. Then it's like steel or aluminum for the spokes. I'm not sure.
Sick.
Must be probably aluminum would make sense. Probably. I don't know.
Can't imagine you'd weigh a carbon. Yeah.
Right.
Mate steel and carbon. It's just pointless.
I don't know. That's a really good
imagine
question.
Imagine a steel center wheel, like a steely with a carbon lip on your Montero. That would make.
Right.
Not as much sense.
Exactly. Yeah, and then there's just the all comes down to the hub. But just once, it was just one spoke, so you shouldn't ride on it, but you can ride on it. And I rode with our friend Anthony, took him to one of the local trails, and we had a good time there. And brought it back, it was fine. And he's checking out a few other things while he has the bike. My dropper has been sticking. Dropper post is the thing where you can make your seat go up and down on the fly.
Is it
fucking dope?
How does that work?
There's a lever on the handlebar on the left side. On mine, it's on the left side. And you push it. And it's like the same kind of cable that you would use for the brakes. But when I push the lever, I use my body weight and the seat drops to a low setting. And then when I'm ready to climb again, I push the lever again and take my body weight off of it. And the seat rises to the top post. I let go of the lever and it's locked in. Yeah.
Wow. So it's awesome. So it's fixed but adjustable. It's not like suspension seat is
I
imagine
you're either up or down. No. You want it down when you're descending because you want to get lower on the bike, and you want it up when you're climbing because you need a nice good riding position. Yeah, it's sick. I love them. The bike's going that way, but this is not a bicycle podcast.
I don't know, but
this is a car.
A lot of tangents between bikes, obviously, and as a performance machine, relative to cars. So That's true. I don't know, I'm interested. I'm not interested in riding, but I'm interested in the machines.
Yeah. No, I mean, it has multi-piston hydraulic disc brakes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, better brakes than both of my cars. yeah. And now it has Bluetooth wireless based shifting on it, which is also kind of crazy.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. I added that in because I'm a dummy. No, it's actually awesome. The derailleur is the thing on the bottom of your bike that moves the chain to the different right. gears of your cassette. Cassette is the gears. Yeah. Call it a cassette. So now they have these things where it's wireless. So the derailleur, the thing that actually physically moves the chain mm-hmm. back and forth, it has a battery that I have to charge. Probably it's lasts for like a mm-hmm. month though. So, and that speaks to the shift lever, mm-hmm. which normally there's a cable that connects yeah. them. The shift lever has basically a watch battery in it. So that's good for a year. And then, and then they just talk. And it's crazy because it, a traditional one, a non-Bluetooth one needs adjusting and, you know, it's not fickle, but it needs more maintenance right. than you'd think. This Bluetooth one can self-adjust. It kind of like can fix itself. It shifts seamlessly. It's pretty sick.
That's wild, dude. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. Shit. Yeah. It's ridiculous what these bikes can do these days. But it, you know, it's cool. So on the car side of things, yeah. you were just at SEMA, like you were saying.
I was. Hang on one second.
You were at SEMA. Yeah. Let's roll into sure. it. Let's like just tell us about your experience, and then we'll go. Yeah. From there.
So my main responsibility there, the only reason I was, I can't say the only reason why I was there, but I'd say, you know, 50-50, 60-40. I was there to record the Hoonigan podcast with Scott Owen, our producer who actually lives in Vegas. We all wanted to be in the same room, and initially we wanted to record from the and broadcast from the show, but that's fucking impossible. It's too loud. There's really nowhere. Right. Like, we thought maybe we'd have a trailer somewhere that we could isolate, but that just didn't work out. So anyway, we just did it from the Airbnb, but it was just kind of a, you know, a cursory talk about what we saw in the first 2 hours of the show. And you know, besides that, obviously, you know, my position at Wheel Pros as, you know, new product specialist requires that I be up on industry trends, find out what everybody else is doing, kind of, you know, find our lane and create a design direction for all of our car and street brands, which is my responsibility. So, you know, I've been to SEMA 20. This is my 20th SEMA. So, I'm kind of jaded.
That's crazy.
Like, yeah, I'm a lot jaded, but I have to admit, like, I didn't really set any expectations because I didn't know what attendance would be like. I didn't know what vehicles would show up. I hadn't really done any research or, like, I wasn't anticipating anything in particular. I just went and I thought, you know, hopefully I'd be pleasantly surprised, but I imagined I'd be let down, just, you know, a sea of bro-dozers as usual. And there was definitely a lot of that, but at the same right. time, there was a lot of cool, really unique builds in the Central Hall, the Performance Hall, which is typically like all the resto mods, hot rod, street rod, shit like that. So mm-hmm. from my perspective, the industry is definitely advancing at the hands of some of the most famous builders like Ring Brothers, Goolsby Customs, Salvaggio, and the Speed Corps. Like, you know, those big name, big dollar builders continue to push limits. And that's the stuff that I'm really interested in, but it's become sort of unattainable. It's like, you know, it's like guys like Kevin Hart are debuting cars at SEMA, right? And he debuted a Grand National, for example, that was built by Salvaggio Design, designed by Sean Smith. And it wasn't a radical departure aesthetically. You know, it looked, you know, at a distance, just like a slammed Grand National. Very clean, very tidy. The interior looked very similar to stock, but just like elevated materials and like OE based design, but packed with technology, packed with like really nice materials. Like, all the plastic was gone. You could tell basically the interior is recreated to look original, but it's probably all metal underneath, you know, some fiberglass, probably some carbon fiber, like just, you know, modernized. And, you know, you're not going to have the creaky thin, cracked plastic dash and door panels and stuff that you'd find in an 80s G body. So there's three G bodies, one under construction that were all really mind blowing, and that was, you know, that was what I was seeking out. I wanted to see that kind of stuff because, you know, for years it's always been boomer shit where it's 50s and 60s hot rods muscle cars. And, you know, we started to see, you know, some trucks in the last few years, like slammed and lifted C10s and F100s and stuff. And those are still prevalent. But I was really excited to see like 80s and 90s cars kind of make a resurgence here. And I wasn't disappointed. I was Goolsby Customs had this sick third gen Camaro that like they designed their own lighting for and created an all new front end and like body kit and stuff. And, you know, if you know those cars, they're pretty shit to begin with. And almost nine times out of 10, any effort to upgrade those cars or modify those cars ends up kind of being cheesy. But I think they did a good job. So I don't know, like overarching themes. I expected a lot more electrified classics and I saw very little of that. I think there was a company called GT Electric that had an electric 911, like a G body style 911. And I think they also had a Jeep Scrambler or Wrangler that was electrified. And, you know, the interesting thing about those cars is that they filled both front and rear compartments, like either with motors or batteries. And like, you know, it's you definitely can't adapt a skateboard platform to older chassis. So it's like you got to stuff the motors where the original motor went and like the batteries, like wherever you have empty space. So I don't know that they're optimized, you know, as far as weight distribution, but it's cool. Like, you know, I don't know that those are the chassis that I would choose to electrify, but it's kind of all over the map, and I just expected more, but it was still cool to see like how these solutions and how they were integrated.
Nice. Now obviously I wasn't there this year, and there's a few things I saw that I thought were interesting and that weren't, like you said, boomery shit, which is good to see. It also seemed like it's the crowds are back. Is that fair?
Absolutely. Like the first day on Tuesday, I drove over to the show. I got there at like 9:30. Show opens at 9, and I'm accustomed to parking either at the Renaissance right next door, or whatever that road is, like alongside the convention center. There's a bunch of apartment complexes that open up their parking, and they typically charge 30, 40 bucks a vehicle. They were all packed. They were all sold out. The Renaissance was charging $100 per car, and I was like, go fuck yourself. God. They're just like, yep, right along this way. And I'm like, no, where's the way out of here? Because I'm not about to pay you $100.
Right.
Like that was 50 bucks last year. So it's just, you know, price gouging, but it was difficult to find parking. There was definitely a larger crowd than last year, which is not, you know, saying a whole lot. Last year was pretty compromised. I don't think there was any international travel last year. So definitely they were lacking the international clientele. And that's a big part of SEMA, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's an important factor for manufacturers, for exhibitors, and obviously for tourism. So when you didn't have that component, when you didn't have that many international visitors, it was attendance was markedly low. But this year, I think they made up for it. Like I heard Mike Spagnola, who's the president and CEO of SEMA, he said that they were expecting 35% more attendees this year than last year, and that sounds about right from my experience. You know, the central hall wasn't super crowded on Tuesday morning when I made my lap, but then when I went back Wednesday afternoon, it was like butts and elbows. It was, you know, it was packed. Like it was hard to take a picture of anything. People are just not self-aware. Everybody's just kind of cruising around doing their own thing and like stopping in the middle of the aisle. And it's, it becomes a nightmare to navigate. And, you know, you try and get a good picture. I don't care if you have an iPhone or if you have like, you know, some sick ass fucking professional lens. They don't give a fuck. People just fucking stand in front of you and fucking chit chat and touch the cars. Like, I'm watching people touch $1 million builds, and they're just like, oh yeah, I had a GMC just like this, and oh, this is cool. Look what they did right here. And like, fucking, is that carbon fiber? And fucking just touching everything and fucking marking it up and scratching it up. I'm just like, dude, even at SEMA, like people, it's not a public car show. It's an industry trade show and people still have no respect for other people's builds and other people's property. And like, that drives me crazy, but you know, it's, that's been the case as long as that show's been a thing. Like it just, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's like, it's like 50% industry, 50% totally lying on a badge.
My cousin's got a body shop and he said, he paint my car if you'd give him the paint. Like, you know, it's just like everybody's looking for a fucking sponsorship deal. Everybody's just fucking, yeah. It's frustrating, but I'm jaded. I qualified all of my statements with that, but there's still some sick shit. Like, you know, just showing up to the show with minimum expectations and walking through, like you still kind of get energized and it's like, fuck, that's cool. Like, you know, that would be something cool to integrate in a project in the future or it inspires something else, whether it's a color scheme, whether it's, you know, a material combination or, you know, particular like software management, you know, it's like one of the guys on my design team, like he found some gauge that's programmable and I forget who the manufacturer was, but he was super excited that he was able to like use this gauge and program four different displays in it. And he'll program it to display his air pressure, his four corner air pressure on his air ride system. And he's a graphic designer and graphic illustrator and 3D designer. So he's just like, yeah, I'm going to make my own fonts and own display. Like, you know, it's like shit like that, that like little shit like that, that you can take away from the show that, you know, sends you home inspired. And it's like, yeah, I got something new that I can do with my project that, kind of takes it to the next level. So I'm always like looking for that kind of stuff personally.
Sure. That's cool. Nice. One of my favorite builds of the show, just because, you know, I've come to talk to him a bit and really like what he's doing. And I mean, he did it himself, is Mike Burrow's Ferrari
444 GTK.
GTK. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, it's Mike is the StanceWorks, and this is a Ferrari 308 that he swapped in a Honda K motor. It's been awesome watching. He's posted all his build progress on his channel. He scrambled, got it done. It's taken home a bunch of awards. People are super stoked on it. I sent him a note saying, you know, awesome work. And I asked if I could come to the shop and see it when he's back from SEMA. He said, absolutely. So I'm going to try to get a video on that. But, you know, cheers to Mike. Yeah. That thing was
awesome. Hell yeah.
Did you see it in person?
And it's like, you know, I haven't watched the last few months of progress on the vehicle. I don't know how much he's posted on YouTube, but it just hasn't showed up in my algorithm, even though I'm subscribed. So, you know, the car's been yellow for its entire development period, and yellow with black flares and gray wheels. So I kind of expected that, or maybe white flares. So that's kind of what I expected. I thought maybe he'd keep it, you know, the original yellow color, or at least color that he bought it. So when I was walking around and I saw it, I just stumbled upon it and it's white with white wheels. And I'm like, fuck yeah. You know, that's like my favorite color combo. And then, I think the car, like at least, I don't know how much, but I assume most of the car, if not all of it, was wired by RyeWire. So Ryan from RyeWire was like hanging there and I was like, oh shit. I started to put two and two together and I realized, oh shit, this is Mike's car. And he was busy. Mike was busy showing the car to somebody. So I just peeked around and like the interior super clean. It's like, you know, like almost like F40 spec where it's like, you know, flocked or felt covered. Oh, just real minimalist. And there's like a lit touchpad for all the electronics and vehicle systems. So it's super sanitary, as is everything that Ryan does. And I just walked around. They were both busy, so I didn't really get a deep dive or an explanation. But I was super impressed. Like it's, there's nothing ratty. There's nothing visibly incomplete. It's not, you know, your typical SEMA project. I assume they drove it in and out, but
they did. Yeah,
the car looks fucking sick. It's super clean and just like, you know, the carbon splitters, everything like is cohesive and fits together nicely and just works. So the K24 swap is controversial and like, I don't personally, I'm not offended by what anybody does with their own car, but I'm just not in love with turbo four cylinders. Like they're super reliable. They're easy to replace. and easy to tune. So I think that's an awesome choice for a car that he plans to beat on.
Yeah, I think for the purposes of the build, it's pretty awesome. And I think it's just kind of fun to combine the two, especially because it's going to annoy some people. And then an interesting note about the color. I went to his shop because he helped me with to actually bend the trophies for Autopia before I merged them together. Originally, we thought he was going to weld them, but like one part of it is steel and one part's aluminum. He's like, "That ain't gonna work." So we're just going to I used adhesive to put them together instead. We were talking, and I drove a certain car over to his shop that I'm not going to say because it would give the color away, but it had a color on it. He's like, "Oh, this is the color I'm going to paint the car." I was like, "Oh, that's genius. That's such a good idea." And then it's not the color the car is. So I was curious. I want to ask him when I see him.
Okay.
I was
like, "Yo, he changed.
Is the color coming?" Yeah. So I don't know if he's planning to still do the color or if he changed it. I was like, "No, let's just do white." So I don't want to say anything yet. But if you look back in my Instagram history, you probably could see a car I drove.
I'm not going to say that would make here. Here's a formula. Here, go.
Yeah. And Mike's probably like, "I don't care." Right. You can say it, but I'm going to wait. And maybe I'll say it next week if nobody figures it out. Yeah. Yeah, that was cool. I also like Turk's Toyota Stout.
Yeah, I didn't see it. That was pretty sweet. I didn't see it, but I saw pictures of it, and that thing's cool as fuck, too. What motor is in that? I thought it was a Beams, but it's some.
That has a Turbo 4, right, too.
But I don't.
Yeah, it's
where it originated.
It's a. What does he say? I watched a video on it today. It's like I don't know the engine code. It was like 3GZT or I don't fucking know. It's not a Toyota engine code ever. I heard of. He was going to use a beefier one based on like what Stephen Papadakis does for the race cars. But there's a chance they're phasing that specific engine out. So they just went with this specific, but the headline I saw said it makes 650 horsepower
and say less.
The wide body on it is sick. The truck looks rad as hell. And then I'm trying to remember what else I saw that was interesting out there. I mean, I saw a bunch of people posting like the typical dregs, you know, and it's usually the big trucks that are like the hokiest shit. Like the worst builds, you know, disconnected drive shafts. There was one somebody posted a picture of. It might have been maybe our friend Leo might have sent me this picture. Someone sent me it, or Rick Radcliffe or someone. But one of the ways they lifted the truck was this like gross thin spacer to add like 6 more inches. Like weld. Oh, it was terrible. And then there was one where like the whole grill just said "cheat on him." Like that was the script on the grill. Like what the fuck are we doing here? It's the dumbest shit.
Yeah. A lot of those builds have just become memes. And it's like, I feel like shitty drift builds and these Brodozer builds have just become memes. And like, they really just want to be internet famous. It's for TikTok and Instagram. Yeah. And it's not really for personal gratification or to advance the hobby or, you know, usability. And I don't know, man.
At least with the shitty drift build, like, if that guy's out there like slinging it around a track, at least it serves a purpose.
But 9 times out of 10, they're just slinging it around a fucking intersection that they've shut down illegally. So
that's true. That's a good point.
That's my issue with those camps or those, I don't know, entities, or those corners of the internet.
I hate those trucks.
Yeah, I do too. I don't pay them any attention. I cruise past them, but I had kind of a revelation like thinking about it though, like, cause I saw this video of one of these Brodozers doing like a 3-wheel, like not a donut, not a burnout, but just like hitting 3-wheel motion. And it probably had air suspension hitting 3-wheel motion going around like a roundabout. And I was like, you know, as much as I hate these things, like as much as I find them stupid as shit and a waste of money and like, you know, just an absolute fucking money pit that you'll never get any sort of value from. Like, what's the use case? Like, that was my thought process. I'm like, that dude is enjoying his truck like a lowrider enthusiast would. So it's like, know, a lowrider doesn't have any better of a driving experience in this, you know, crazy diesel truck that's pulling 3 wheels. So It's like, all right, like you're enjoying, I don't know what corner of the world you're at with that shit, because we just don't see them out here in California, especially in, you know, urban areas. Like it's like
Texas.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know what you guys are doing with your shit on Friday and Saturday nights, but, you know, I can't really talk shit when my favorite thing to do on a Friday night is go down to Rosie's Dog Beach in Long Beach and see, you know, lowriders hopping and hitting three wheel motion. I'm like, all right, like it's just as silly, it's just as useless. So whatever you want to spend your money on, like, you know, it doesn't affect me, but it doesn't interest me at all either.
I could make arguments though where the lowrider isn't a danger to pedestrians.
Absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. I've seen fucking
springs
come flying out of lowriders while hopping in the fucking park. Absolutely. They are just as dangerous. They're as dangerous as any other activity. You know, it's like they might not be swinging around and like wiping out pedestrians, but you could get decapitated by a spring that comes flying out of a fucking poorly built lowrider that's hopping. Oh.
Yeah, but I just mean when that car's cruising down the road, normal. Right. And the truck's cruising down the road. Like that dude in the truck, who's probably like 5'4". He can't see over the fucking steering wheel. And those headlights, that's like, you think the person who built that truck is like, I should re-aim my headlights.
No.
They're like, no, you know what? Since they're already up, I'm going to turn the high beams on. Yeah.
No, you're right. In that regard, like, they're definitely a hazard to pedestrians and lowered vehicles. It's just like
and if you take a shitty example of any type of build, it's a shitty example. But if you paired whatever the best example of those shitty trucks against the best lowrider, the craftsmanship is like a different planet.
I've seen some really well built fucking brodozer trucks, but they're still. I'm agreeing with you. They're still not at, like, they're nothing to sneeze at. Like everything hand fabricated, actually engineered. Like there's some guys that like do it right, and the truck rides like a Cadillac, is totally, you know, safe to drive, fucking drive straight, does everything you want it to do. And I've driven a couple of those, and I've been impressed. But they're still not at the artisan level of craftsmanship that lowriders are. Like, you know, paint, bodywork, engraving. Just amazing. I mean, they're literal works of art that happen to drive down the street sometimes.
100%. I would love a lowrider. Yeah. I think they're so fucking awesome. Especially where I live, like in this suburban Orange County
like
town.
I see lowriders pass by every Saturday and Sunday here, and occasionally during the week. So it's like not that big a deal, but I still want to be part of that community. I think that would be so fucking cool to have a lowrider.
I like never see them here.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
So be the shit. I just want to borrow one for a week just to see people be like, who the fuck is that?
I'll buy or build one.
It would get you borrow it. Yeah. Please do. Trying to think of what else I saw at SEMA that was interesting. I almost did go. I got invited by
Volkswagen. Why didn't you go? Just busy?
Because it's the problem for me with SEMA is a lot of the invites come in and they're like, come out on Halloween, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm not skipping Halloween with my kid. And then Volkswagen was like, you know what? We can give you a car and you could drive out after. I'm like, I could have done that, but fuck it. I'm like, there's not a lot for me to cover there for Auto Trader, which is the one that pays the bills. So it's like,
I get it. It was, I mean, I went out on my own dime, but I drove out Monday. Yeah. So I drove out on Halloween, but like most of our friends and, you know, associates with kids, like actually came out Tuesday morning. Fucking Scotto and Ken Block went out. They left like after trick-or-treating, got in at like 3 a.m. and had to be at a breakfast and show Electricana at 7 a.m. So I know Scotto got like 2 hours of sleep. So, you know, it's like, you know, you make a certain sacrifice to be with your family on Halloween, and it, you know, it's what you got to do if you have obligations and you really want to spend that time with your family. But I wouldn't suggest that anybody do that, but, you know, I can say this without having kids and driving up, and getting there like 8 o'clock Monday, like Halloween, I was really disappointed. Like I thought attendance was going to be way down because honestly, Vegas was empty Monday night. Like I guess everybody went crazy on Saturday and Sunday, because Monday, like I've been to probably 6 or 7 SEMAs where Halloween happens to fall Monday or Tuesday, and Sunday, Monday or Tuesday. And it's wild. It's wild. It's the craziest place on the planet for Halloween. It was really muted. It was really tame this year. And I was disappointed by the lack of costumes just all around and lack of people out partying. So, you know, I enjoyed my time with my friends, but we were all just like, man, like we're kind of veterans, so we're all just like,
did you guys dress up?
Absolutely not.
No, absolutely not. I know Rutledge Wood was there in costume with his buddy Ryan Eversley, uh-huh. was also in costume with a couple other people. That's funny. Absolutely not.
I mean, I dressed up and I went out in Hollywood on Saturday night, so I got that out of my system.
And Oh, yeah. You exactly. and,
I had the full Halloween experience.
You posted a video too that I have questions about.
Ask him.
We can talk after. somebody looked in the camera and said something and walked away.
That guy jumped a fence right in front of security at the VIP entrance to get into the party. And like he cruised past me. He's like, you didn't see shit, homie. And the best part about that is that a fellow friend and coworker actually at Hoonigan, he was like, yo, I know that dude. I was like, shut the fuck up. And he's like, sends me his name and everything. He's just like, he hopped the fence to get in the party, didn't he? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, dude, he did that in all of our high school parties because he wasn't invited to anything. He would just hop the fence and bum rush the party. Dude, shirtless, jumps his party at like this compound in Hollywood. It's actually FaZe Clan headquarters. I don't know if you know anything about like gaming or
esports, like, right? Yeah.
He jumps the fence and runs in. And I heard him rustling coming over the fence. And I was like, oh, this is going to be good. So I started recording. And yeah, he cruises by and he's like, you see shit, homie. And just fucking walked in like he owned the place. But that's his MO.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's his thing. Yeah. That's his entrance. Okay. That's insane. All right. Well, because I didn't understand what was happening in the first part of the clip. So I had questions, which is very funny. Anything else from SEMA that stuck out? How many of the Ring Brothers builds did you see? Because they had like 4 of them there.
I saw 3 of them. They had a 69 or 70 Mustang that I passed by. And I'm just like, supposedly that car has like the most hours in it of all of them, which is fucking hard to believe because
that's crazy.
It looked the most original.
Huh.
But I didn't get up on it. And their builds are all about details.
Yeah.
And I should have gone back and spent some time with it. But I feel like the pony car thing, like the Ring Brothers pony car thing, like I don't feel like they can knock my socks off anymore. Like I wanted to see something different from them. And that 39 Chevy, I think it was a 39 Chevy that is like, they like, it's crossbred with like a F1 car. Like that's their theme. Had a lot of carbon fiber. It was open wheel. It was a 39 Chevy truck.
Oh, it's like the truck, yeah, right? Like yeah, a, yeah. Like the green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. That thing was cool as fuck. I don't want to knock it because there's nothing to knock, but it was just like it. Man, this is going to sound fucking weird and kind of shitty, but like Hoonigan built a,
I was just going
to
ask.
Hoonigan built a fucking Honda Ridgeline with an actual IndyCar motor, right?
Right.
And the Ring Brothers like had this F1 themed 39 Chevy truck, but it just had like a conventional naturally aspirated V8. And it was just like, I'm assuming LS base. I could be wrong, but like, you know, it wasn't anything exotic. And that's what I felt was lacking. Because there was also FDRX7. With a Kaiza design body kit built by Goichi Motors, who's from Florida. Right. And they had that car at SEMA like 4 years ago. And I think it had a 13B or maybe even a 4-rotor, like big turbo setup. And it was just like, that was my favorite car at SEMA a few years ago. So it was in the contention for being my favorite car this year also, because they put a fucking AMG V12 in it, which is basically like the same motor as a Pagani Zonda. So front engine with this fucking long ass, big ass V12 with individual throttle bodies. Like apparently the car's not functional. Like I don't think it has a transmission in it, but it will be. Like they build runners and it will get done. And that's like as wild as Turks Judd V10 Super. You know, it's just a ridiculous motor, and I'm sure
it's on the level.
Yeah,
it's on the level.
So it's like if you're going to build an F1 themed hot rod, like lend some, I don't know, reverence to some period of F1. Like a naturally aspirated LSV8 is not really like pushing the limits and in line with all of the carbon and all of the other design elements that that were incorporated. I felt like it was kind of pedestrian relative to kind of the expectation, because they said they were going to, you know, it was going to be a game changer and it was going to like elevate everything to the next level. And I just think personally, if you're going to tout that, then you should have something really exotic powering it. I may have missed some details, but still, it was just like pie cut exhaust going into like a carbon like side splitter. It was cool as fuck. Like I just posted on my stories because it was cool as fuck. But the build of theirs that actually impressed me the most was the like 68, 69, 70 K5 Blazer that they built.
Yeah.
Fuck. Like the coolest fucking thing I've seen in a long time, just because at a glance, like I was walking around with Vin and I was like, yo, you got to come check this out. And he was just like, like, you know, he was kind of in a hurry and he had a meeting. And I'm like, no, dude, take a minute. Come over here. Look at this shit. Cause I saw it yesterday and I was really impressed. So we went by and it's like a Blazer. They built this crazy, you know, roll bar structure. And it's not just a roll bar, like it's stylized. You know, obviously they have like clip in roof panels or like bolt on roof panels. And, the seats are like strung leather and like, it's like a suspension seat. Like it actually has like the seats have coilovers basically. Like they have shock absorbers. It's got a 1200 horsepower supercharged LS.
I did know that. Yeah.
It's every panel has been touched. Every panel has been massaged, like modified. Crazy suspension setup, but pretty conventional, but it's like coilovers and like a four link with truck arms. But they had forged carbon fender flares, like bespoke forged carbon fender flares. Like the details were incredible. The door handles were shaved and then they basically built metal door tops. They just like rolled the metal over and the door handles, if you can visualize this, were basically on the top surface, but horizontal. So you'd pull up on them in order to get in and out. So I guess they probably had like glass delete. I don't remember seeing, maybe there was a window channel and you still had windows, but like basically like the door handles on the top surface of the door. So it left the sides super clean. I mean, everything was custom. Like it was just honestly like the most breathtaking thing I've seen in a while. And I wouldn't expect that from a truck, but it's like beyond street rod level build for a 4x4.
And right.
Yeah, it'll probably never get used in anger on dirt, but
no.
It's fucking sick. It's just like everything was custom. There was nothing. I mean, they might as well have built the body from scratch. They may have like
Right.
That was the coolest thing for me, because it was just like a build level that you wouldn't expect for a 4x4.
Wow. Cool. I got to take a closer look at that. I saw the headline about the horsepower, but I didn't know about all the build quality of it. That's crazy. I am jumping over to our questions. Because we've got a decent amount of them here tonight. Let's see. First one from Ultramotive. If I show my car at Autopia at the Peterson, is there anything I need to know first? No. Please do. Come, show up, have a good time. No, there's nothing you need to know. JD2RS, if you could join any race team in any series for 1 year, which one would it be? That's a good question. I'd probably go with like an endurance or like some manner of GT3 or LMDH, especially LMDH in the upcoming season would be really fun. So the easy answer would be Petronas and shadow Lewis Hamilton for a season, because I think that'd be amazing, especially as he's getting older. I think I'd go with like an LMDH team or like a high level Porsche GT3 team. Maybe Acura, just something to like, or just follow Jordan Taylor for a season just because the dude's fucking hilarious. What about you?
He didn't say past or present, dead or alive, but I'm going to take it as that.
That's true.
So Dale Earnhardt 1998 season, the season that he won the Daytona 500 for the first and only time. It's like the most poignant moment in motorsports when he won the Daytona 500 and the entirety of NASCAR lined up on pit road to, you know, give him a high five. And, you know, that was just like the culmination of his career. Like he had basically set every record, done everything he ever wanted, but win the Daytona 500. It seemed like he was cursed, and, you know, I think he had a good season, but still that would be the season. I would love to be on that team for that moment. It doesn't even matter what happened the rest of the season. Just to be there in that moment, that's like winning every championship, you know, every MVP award all at the same time.
Right. Based on your interpretation of the question, I'm changing my answer with this new caveat, this new wrinkle, and I'm gonna spend a season with James Hunt in vintage F1, just having the best
also
life.
Before you were married with kids and
of course. Telkins Jr. asks, what car would you love to give a 1/10 Singer treatment to? BMW E24 M6 for me. Wow, that's an interesting choice. E24 M6. What car would I give like a Singer treatment to that would be really
fun? When he
says
1/10, does that mean 1/10 the expense? 1/10 the...
I think they're saying like because Singer's such an insane level of thing now, like even if you gave a car 1/10, but I'm just going to interpret it as like giving it the Singer treatment, just because the 1/10 part is a little weird. Honestly, I think like this Jag behind me would be pretty fucking sick if it was Singerized. That would transform something like this. I think also a Benz wagon, like an unassuming my era Benz wagon would be pretty fucking awesome if I could go like ham on the powertrain and the interior. So yeah, either the Jag or my Benz wagon are the two that spring to mind.
That's a good question. And that's a good answer. Similarly and selfishly, I would say a Fox Body Mustang, because that was, you know, kind of the inspiration for the interior of my car was to elevate the materials. Like, you know, I replaced the door handles and door handle bezels that were plastic and prone to breaking. I replaced those with billet pieces. I anodized them, you know, covered what was carpet with suede. I flocked the dash. You know, it's like all about keeping it familiar. You know, I've got a digital dash in the car, keeping it familiar, but upgrading it, modernizing it, and making it more comfortable and just more like pleasing to the touch. Like everything that you touch is really how you interact with the car. Like I think people forget that. It's just like, you know, if a car performs and does everything you want, but it still has a fucking C5 or C6 Corvette interior build grade, like there's something missing there. It's fucking just gross and icky. And like Fox bodies weren't super nice interiors, but they were functional and like they were laid out nice and they were ergonomic, and I didn't want to lose that with my personal car, but I also wanted to upgrade it. So Fox body for sure. And then along those same lines, like I still like something came up last week, and a friend of mine and Anthony's basically put some wheels on a Callaway C4 Corvette, a Callaway ZR1. And I think that car could use the same treatment. Like exterior is super cool, but like, you know, upgrading materials, upgrading brakes, upgrading, you know, literally everything to modern standards, and just stylizing it in a classic, but contemporary way. I think, bringing that interior up to date and making it, I don't want to say compatible, but, appropriate for the exterior appearance would be my jam, because they had trash ass interiors too.
Yeah. Real Cool Ferrips asks, what's the longest wheelie or burnout you've done? I suck at wheelies, so just a couple pedals. I'm not good at them at all. It's frustrating. The longest burnout I've done is in a car that you wouldn't expect. It was in the Lexus. It's like three gens ago now.
IS?
I've been doing this for so long. No, LS. Oh, really? The hybrid.
Oh, shit.
I did like a long ass burnout. Like I did a brake stand. I just rolled into it. It just kept going. It could light them up like nobody's business. That was probably, and then, you know, another one was probably in like a, some manner of Challenger, but that Lexus LS stands out to me as like a ridiculously long walking it down the road type burnout.
Yeah. Speaking of Challengers, mine is definitely in my Hellcat Challenger. And, I did a lot of really expensive burnouts. I spent so much money on tires because I foolishly went with 21s. I built 21 inch wheels for those, for that car.
Oh man.
And, the rears were 325, 30, 21s, which was basically the tire size from the Porsche GT3 RS. So for a while I had Sport Cup twos on there and they were like six.
And you were burning them up.
I burned them up in one afternoon at the Hoonigan Burn Yard. I was just like, it was my birthday. Oh, and I brought two stock wheels to swap on, but I forgot to bring my lug key and my lug wrench and everything. Like I brought the jack. I brought everything except for like the last little details that I needed in order to swap them over. Like I didn't have the factory lugs and I was just like, fuck. And I was like, it's my birthday. I don't give a fuck. I'm still going to do this. So I killed those tires that day. But the longest standing burnout that I did was in that car coming home from like Sunday fun day with my buddy once. And just going from Hollywood over the hill back to our place in the valley. And I mean, it had to have been an eighth mile, between an eighth mile and a quarter mile, because it was uphill and I just kind of did a brake stand and I got in a second and I just like slowed down and just like literally just like swayed from side to side and like left the car behind me in a cloud of dust and smoke. And yeah, it was outrageous, but it was like, I have to do this. This has to happen once. Like I have to do this.
It's this what the car
stupid
wants.
Stupid ass fucking long ass burnout on the street just once. And after that, I was like, oh, I can't afford to do this really. So no mas.
Nice. Madalena, actually, no, same question. What classic would you like to see taken to the Singer Icon Alphaholics level? They specified classic though. So I would like to see, I'm sure somebody's done it, not to the level of a Singer or an Icon. I would like to see like some manner of late 60s fastback Mustang fully singerized. So like looks nice and clean on the outside. And then just like, I'd like to see it taken to the crazy thing about Singers is because a Porsche 911 is kind of timeless. It never feels like a cheesy resto mod, if that makes sense. Like there's not like, you know, a Grant steering wheel and like light up gauges and then these goofy LED headlights. It's like everything is purposeful and clean and smart. So that attention to detail, and I'm sure someone's done it. Maybe the Ring Brothers have done it. I don't know. But like that level of detail done to like a 68 Mustang in like a nice Highland green color would be, that'd be the jam.
Fuck, man. Like I agree with you. That was the first thing that came to mind for me. So just to try and have a unique answer,
a wing car would be cool too.
Yeah,
like a Daytona.
Yeah, but
that'd be sick.
I mean, those are, I mean, no knock to our buddy Mike Musto, those things are humongous and they're just like, it's like having a dually. Like it's like it's so goddamn big, like I couldn't even park it in my garage. So it's like, I don't know, when I think of Singer, I think of pure driving experience and everything just being right, like ergonomics, like touch, taste, smell, like sound, everything. And that's why I said the Fox Body originally, because it's like, you know, my favorite driving experience because it's what I'm most familiar with. But I guess if I were to do something besides that, probably a 69 Camaro. Like, you know, it's like the other iconic, you know, arm of the of the pony car and like muscle car era. Like they've been done so many different ways, but if one was, I haven't seen one that's done like in Singer style where it's just it's original appearing, but like everything is just elevated and tactile, like improvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a good answer. We'd have dueling Singer pony cars when we hit the lottery. Digitale says NASCAR. Since I know Ron loves it, and he had a good analysis on the wall ride on the Hoonigans podcast. That doesn't feel like a question, though.
it's not a question.
Did you have a good analysis on the wall ride?
Know. I mean,
on the Hoonigans podcast.
I don't know. Like I don't know what to say. Like. Thank you, I guess, but
I'm like reading it, like rereading it. Like I know I've had a couple sips of scotch. Like, did I miss a word? Like, sorry, Digitale. Know, yeah,
did like, you see that? Like, I mean, I could talk ad nauseum about it, but I mean, what was your take on that? What did you think of it?
I didn't see it until Parker Kligerman posted about it because I don't watch NASCAR.
You're missing out.
It was sick.
You are missing out. I'm telling you.
But I mean, look, it was sick because I wanted to see. I wanted to see what Parker was so excited about because he was like super stoked on it. And they were joking about how like someone did the actual video game move that they didn't think was possible. Right. And it was Ross Chastain. Yeah. Is that the driver's name? He just fucking sent it with a lap left.
Yep.
He needed Bosey's assessment.
Like his spotter and his crew chief came on at the beginning of that last lap and were like, we need two. He's like, we need two. Okay. Like he's just fucking
Parker said his, like, even though he was in the wall, his lap speed was higher than any other lap of the race. So he was passing everybody.
That's because he shifted to fifth on a half mile track where you normally only use like second, third, fourth. Like, I don't even think they use second. Like, they downshifted third and then, like, you know, top of the straightaway, they use fourth. So, like, once he matted it and realized he needed two spots, he went to fifth to give him the extra miles an hour. And fucking laid into it. The car bouncing all over the place. He said he took his hands off the wheel because the wheel was bouncing all over the place.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
and just fucking went. And like it looked fast forward, right? Like it didn't look real. Like every time I saw a replay for the first day, I was just like, that's so stupid. Like, why are they playing it in fast forward? Like, that's not necessary. Like, but then like I started reading analysis and hearing analysis and like even the announcers like Steve Letarte and Dale Jr. were just like, we couldn't believe what we were seeing because the way the car was bouncing off the wall, like there's no way it's still accelerating. But he got up to 130, 135 miles an hour in the corner where everybody else was 60 miles an hour. That's how he was able to create that disparity in visual speed.
Jesus Christ, that's amazing. That's so rad. Mind Coffee Clash asks, what current driving law would you eliminate? It's the elimination of a law through the addition of a law, if this makes sense. Sure. I would add, what the hell do you call it?
Left lane camping?
No.
Okay, that's going to be mine.
That's a good one to get rid of. And it's nice. It's amazing driving in an area of the country where like people
they enforce it.
Feels good. Or just where like drivers kind of are used to it. Now there are sections of this country where people don't just sit there. But the one it's what is it called? Oh, conditional in Germany, they have conditional speed limits. So if it's foggy out or raining or like this and that, there'll be a speed limit on this section of the Autobahn. But if it's not, the speed limit goes up. Or is eliminated. And there are sections of the 5 freeway. If they could just add like one lane to make it a 3 lane, where it's 2 lane, north like, farm country.
Okay, north of here, between here and Norgal, like San Francisco, like Bay Area. Yeah.
Like blowing past Bakersfield type shit. Where it's 2 lanes, if they added one more lane, made it a conditional speed limit, because like, I could very comfortably be doing 140, 150 miles an hour in that part. So they should. It basically be the elimination of a speed limit through the addition of conditional speed limits.
I'd agree with that. I mean, it's similar to my sentiment. Just get the fuck out of the left lane. Like, have respect for the left lane, and most freeways, like, basically have a conditional, you know, speed limit. It's like, if you know you're going to be unimpeded and other lesser drivers know to stay right. Like, I got home yesterday from Vegas in 3.5 hours. When I left, my navigation said 4.5 hours. There was no traffic. It's not like traffic cleared up. I left at fucking 9:30 at night, but I just set my cruise control for 94 miles an hour. I don't know why 94 arbitrary, but I was listening to podcasts. I had my legs crossed. I was just like super chilling. You know, my car has adaptive cruise control, so I didn't have to like worry about running into anybody. Like I've learned to trust it. So, yeah. You know, there was a few times where people were going like 70 in the fucking fast lane. It's like, dude, what the fuck are you doing on the 15 in the middle of the night going fucking 70 right. miles an hour in this lane? What are you doing?
Wild.
Like why?
Wild. That's another great example of a road that could use a conditional speed limit.
So it's, you know, it's mostly three lanes and it's just like, if you just got the fuck over, my average speed would be 94 miles an hour. You know, I didn't stop. I didn't have to pee. I didn't need gas. Like I filled up and I fucking got my snacks and I peed and I fucking just hauled ass home. And if it weren't for those goobers, I would have averaged 94 miles an hour, but I averaged 80 instead. I just think people just need to respect that. Like it's fucking shit.
It is fucking shit. I agree. I hate it. Dr. Miller 45 asks, what aftermarket wheels would you and Ron put on a 22 Civic Si? The stockers are so nice. Yeah. I mean, I think Honda did a fine job with those stock wheels. I don't have a specific wheel in my head. Ron would have a better idea.
Yeah. We have a number of Motegi wheels, like our MR 151, 152, 153. We have basically 17, 18 or 19 inch, fitments for Civic Si in those three wheels. So it gives a little bit of variety, but, I mean, I'm not going to mention any other brand, so sorry for self-promoting, but
right.
We made those wheels specifically for those, you know, these newer imports, so that would be my recommendation.
Speaking of Motegi, I was sending Ron questions. I was like, yo, what's your discount on Motegi? Because I saw a set that I liked for the Mazda, but I'm like, I can't. It'd be stupid. My wife would kill me.
You don't have to spend money at Motegi. Just get your tires.
Okay. I got tires. They're sitting right over there. Michelin Defender 2s that I have to review. Daniel Robert DeRue, thoughts on Stancework Mike's 308 build? We covered that pretty good. Triple thumbs up across the board.
And
the third one's my win.
Okay. never mind. I was going to say, if and when you go visit Mike and check the car out.
Two big thumbs up and one.
No more. Never mind.
Two big thumbs up and one that's
I'll go on a separate occasion.
It's fine. Danger Russ M3 asks, talk me out of high compression pistons for my engine rebuild.
Vehicle. No. What?
It's an M3.
Oh, okay.
He's rebuilding. Nah.
M3 is any performance sedan, like actual performance car.
Because it's an E36. I want that
shit high strung, rev happy, just. Yep. Waiting to be thrashed.
Get the lightest flywheel you can get where it's like difficult to drive, but you can rev the shit out of it. where it's like, I shouldn't have got this. Mm-hmm. Every time I leave a stoplight, I hate this car. But once I'm going, it's good. There you go. That's the best way to do it. That's where we're at tonight. We covered a little bit of SEMA.
So our buddy Leo CNC Picks had a question about SEMA. And I think we covered it. He basically asked what was the best and the worst of SEMA. And the best was what we discussed. What I already said, my favorite was that K5 from Ring Brothers. I think the worst is just Brodozers in general. And, you know, just like these obnoxious wastes of space or occupiers of space. I mean,
No. I'm asking a question. If it's related to it's a part of the automotive culture that I don't fully understand. So I'm asking, and I don't know if you understand it. But what's the whole like the sad boy stuff?
What the fuck are you talking about? You know,
it's like this. Almost feels like it's like an incel-y type beater car. There's a great Instagram account. I think it's geo.baz that like makes fun of these people who are like, they build these cars with, they have like all these Asian logos on them. And they're like sad boy club. And I don't get it. I don't know what it is.
You have to share with me because I haven't even seen this.
I'll send you the link after, but the Instagram account's very funny. But All right. I should mention
one more car that has kind of become my favorite. And I feel bad because I glossed over it on Tuesday. I just saw it and I was like, wow, that's weird, but that's cool. Okay. What am I looking at? And then I went back yesterday and like did a deeper dive and I'm like, of course this is my favorite car here. And it's not, but it should be. It was I didn't realize it at the time, but Rocket Bunny just released a new C5 Corvette kit. The front end is like supposedly inspired by like earlier Corvettes, so like probably C3 really, because it's like got kind of like a pointy nose and you know, it's like okay. like the, I don't know how to describe it, but it's in my stories and I'll probably post it because it obviously I connect with the car because it has a 777 livery on it. It has a half mm-hmm. Japanese and half American livery. One side is basically, do you remember the Spirit of, I don't know if it was Spirit of 76 or Spirit of America. I think they were Le Mans C3 Corvettes, like big block Corvettes that okay. race at Le Mans.
Okay.
And they were Spirit of America or Spirit of 76, and they had like a flowing American flag down the side. So on one side, it has a flowing American flag and big 777s in gold. And on the other side, it's got the big 777s in gold and a flowing Japanese flag. And on the hood, it says Spirit of Kyoto and 777.
Oh, nice.
So it's this Rocket Bunny wide body C5 Corvette that's built by, I assume, a Japanese builder, but it might be a U.S. builder. I just found the guy, and maybe he is American. I'm not sure, but it's got fucking... stacks. It's got stack injection sticking out of the hood. And at first really? Glance, I thought it was an NSX that was like a NA1 NSX that was converted to like front engine. I was like, what the fuck is that? And I just glanced at it and I was like, oh, I got to take a picture of this. And I was like, oh, I walked around and I was like, it's a vet. And I was totally mesmerized. It's got like Brid seats. It's got the exact Brid seats that I wanted for my Mustang. That I saw on display at Tokyo Auto Salon in like 2014. So it's got a lot of elements that I identify with, you know, from my Mustang or from my own imagination. It's like, you know, I don't know what the coincidence in the 777s is, but the car right. was executed in a way that I can really appreciate. So I definitely want to meet or talk to the owner and see the car in depth, but it was pretty sick.
I got to find that one. I was just Googling for it and I couldn't find it, but I'll look on your stories. All right, there we go. Leo, you got your question at the buzzer. Congratulations, friend. And for everybody else, thanks for listening and watching.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.